Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hi, I want to welcome everybody to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in our cafe book club. We are talking about the book Presence by Amy Cuddy. And just for somebody who's a newbie checking into our show, Amy Cuddy, about 2 years ago, had done a TED Talk about body stance and how in taking a particular body stance, it actually changes your mental attitude about how you're doing stuff. So we have a brand newbie on the show tonight, Mr. Joel. Mr. Joel, how are you tonight?
I am fine. How are you?
I am great. I am glad to be having you join us. And we have a special guest diner in the house. My husband, Andrew, our producer for the show, is joining us tonight, too, because it's just such a great topic. Mr. Andrew, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well.
Okay. So glad to have you gentlemen joining me tonight. So tonight we're going to be talking about what I call this episode, which is episode 7, is Surfing Your Way to Happiness. And, Joel, are you familiar with the book Presence at all?
I'm having a lot of trouble hearing. It's my fault. My hearing is very bad.
Oh, okay.
But okay. I'm going to stay on the line.
Okay. Do you know about the book? Did Amy tell you? My co-host Amy Frost is normally on here, and she had invited Joel to come on and jump onto the show. So did she tell you a little bit about the book and what it was about?
A little bit, yes.
Okay. So we're really going into, like I said, this is chapter 7, part 7 of the book, and this one's really, really interesting because it's that's one thing about this book that I really love about Amy Cuddy is you think you're going into this chapter and you've kind of got it figured out when you get started, but you never have it figured out. So I think it's just a really just such a book that you get so many ahas that it's just really amazing. How about you, Andrew? Have there been things that, since you've been going through the book, he's so great at being able to create the wonderful stuff that we have at transformation-cafe.com. So all the links and everything that you see from the show, the different add-ons that we add to, that's all his doing. He's his creative self putting it all out there. So what about you, honey? Did you think there was anything that's been really interesting as we've gone through the chapters?
Well, I think there's any number of things that can be applied, like we had spoken about a little bit earlier. I like how Amy Cuddy is using the science to illustrate how various things that we're already aware of, such as the practice of yoga being of benefit to both the mind and the body, and how that's been demonstrated scientifically to be used as a treatment in things we might not have thought of, something like PTSD. So there's a lot of aha moments. And as we've been progressing through the book, and I've been working on the transformation-cafe.com website, there's a lot of supporting materials out there. She talks about a lot of different scientists, and it's been really interesting for me to go out and find discussions by these people and try and incorporate some of that into supporting the book. So, yeah, I've learned a lot of different things.
I would love for you to share. He's had a couple instances where he's actually taken some of the body stances and had different results. So we want to share one of those with the audience.
Sure. The one that comes to mind first is I'm a technical trainer. So recently I've had to take over some classes that are sort of new for me, and training is not something I do in front of people all the time. So feeling a little bit of stress, I decided to go ahead and give a power pose, doing a Superman-type pose prior to doing the training to sort of bolster my confidence. And I found that it put me in a higher level of energy, and I felt good going in. I was able to interact with all the students more effectively. So
yay, that's exciting. Like, I was really happy when he shared that with me when he had come home from work one day. So, and I'll share the other one about when you were passing those two ladies in the work, your work area.
Okay. Well, I'm normally kind of a low-key person, and I tend to, if I'm walking past somebody like in the office, I tend to kind of try and shrink my body up and not get in the way. But I decided when I saw some people standing in the aisleway that I would try the opposite approach, and as I was walking toward them, to make myself bigger. So to just put my elbows out a little bit, to walk a little bit more energetically and see what happened. And this time they stepped out of my way. They knew from quite a distance that I was coming. Ordinarily, they wouldn't have moved at all.
Yeah, if you go to our last episode with part 7, which would have been episode TC 291, Andy's done really neat. He found a website that has what was that website called? It has the dots on it where you can see how things move. You can see how the body moves depending on the physical position and, you know, just different body types.
Well, there's a link from our last episode. I don't recall the exact website address, but what it is, it's an interactive tool. Amy Cuddy had mentioned one of the laboratories that she had worked with doing some of these studies about how people walk when they're depressed or when they're feeling more powerful or what have you. And it gives you the chance to use these sliders to say, okay, so here's how somebody in a happy state would walk, and somebody who is feeling sad, and somebody who is nervous, and somebody who is, you know, feeling good. And you can see how the walk changes, and you can rotate the image, and, you know, you can make it male or female or whatever. So it's really quite interesting to see the difference.
Yeah, while Andy was talking, I went ahead and pulled that up, and it's called the BioMotion Lab. So it's really, really cool. And it's Patakamas is the name of the website. It's patakamas.com, but that's PATAKOSMOS. And like I said, if you go to the transformation-cafe.com and go to episode 291, you'll be able to see that on there. And he brought it up for me, and I was checking it out. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is so cool. Because you can literally have somebody walking around like in a circle, and you're not just looking at a frontal view. You can do the behind. You can see it from the side. You can see it walking in a circle. And it's just really fascinating. So that's a BioMotion lab that that we had available with this last episode. So I just really want to encourage people to go to that last one and check it out. So Amy and I wound up having a really good conversation about, you know, using your voice and smiling when you do sales calls and all different kinds of stuff. So there's some really good stuff that came out from that episode. So as always, you know, Andy does just a really amazing job of just all the connections and stuff that's out there. I think you've been having kind of fun this time with this book, too, because there's just so much that you can put out there for just adding on to just, you know, giving a taste of what we're talking about from each chapter and then having people being able to go and to see all the different resources, like you said before.
Sure. And, you know, there's some things that I hadn't really thought about before that I look at in a kind of different way now, like, you know, the fact that people who have had a victory in, say, a sporting event will just automatically put their hands in the air, you know, in the form of a V. So, I mean, I've seen that all my life, but I never really thought about it.
Yeah, I was having a good time watching the Super Bowl this time and having that in the back of my mind. I was really watching, you know, both teams and just even you know, people watching the game. You know, it was interesting to see that whole event from just a different perspective. If you're looking at it from that sense of power poses and people just, you know, expressing themselves. So it was really just a different kind of experience having that as a just different way of looking at it. So, well, let's go ahead and jump into chapter 7 here. So it's called Surfing Smiling and Singing Ourselves to Happiness. And if you go back to a lot of our episodes, again, at the Transformation Desk Cafe, we've got, gosh, last year we did at least 5 or 6 different episodes just on the different research that's out there nowadays on happiness. And I'm so glad that it's just really come into its own where people, you know, that psychology is really taking that on. It's just something very serious to look at. And I've even done stuff with laughter yoga that have people being able to connect to that and having it's something that it's been out there probably for 15, 20 years, actually about 20 years since it originally got created. But how it's just starting to be more mainstream and people are really seeing the value on, you know, when because with laughter yoga, there's a lot of power poses that get taken that I didn't even really realize when I first became a facilitator for classes. So it's just giving it that much more of a rich experience and seeing it from just a lot of different ways that it can be benefiting your body and your psychology, you know, with how all they got on it. So the first one she talks about is an Australian. Her name is Eve Fairbanks. And Eve was a professional surfer. And it, what was really cool about that is she ended up becoming a writer and she was a journalist. And what happened was is she started doing different kinds of articles and stuff. And she had started writing about how that surfing had really taught her all different ways that she could benefit that on dry land. And she talks about when she was learning to surf, how she just had to really change her psychology of just really watching herself and noticing how things were just different for her. You know, a lot of the first mistakes that come out when you're surfing is you focus too much on the specific skills that we think are required to become a good surfer. When actually, you know, an amateur just imagines themselves as an adventure sporter who is all about the skills. And she said, we have to acquire strength in the muscle memory before we can accomplish a sporting feat. And she said that, you know, she kept falling off and falling off and falling off. And finally, her coach just stopped and looked at her and said, you need to decide that you're going to stay on the board. And I thought that was such a great thing because she said that really was just a turning point for her about that she just had to have a tenacity about not allowing yourself to get off that, you know, to fall off or get off when it came to that. For that, and she started realizing she started being able to just catch more and more waves and being able to stay on. And she said, decision creates confidence. I thought that was so great, putting it out there like that, and said that's what she's really learned from being on the surfboard. And she's been able to take that into just every part of her life and having it where, you know, it's a figurative board. When it comes to, like, the plan could be the ocean that I'm going on to, and I'm just going to basically make these decisive decisions for confidence. So what did you think about that, Andy, when you were checking that out before the show?
I thought it was really interesting, you know, the idea that if you just make a decision that you're not going to fall off anymore, then your body will figure out how to do that. You know, it's not a matter of, like you were saying, learning all the individual skills of where to stand and all of those things. So, yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, and I just think that in itself, you know, I do a lot of different networking and we're always being asked to do, you know, business tips and things like that. And then I'm looking forward to when I can use this as just a quick business tip and a presentational kind of a thing for people to be able to look at that. So Eve goes on to say, the problem is that what lies inside our minds is invisible. We can only imagine it, but we experience our bodies centrally. It's so powerful to get a sense of our character as our bodies express it, as all of our senses perceive it. She says, a sense of character as our body expresses it. And that's really what this chapter is about. It's really coming from the body expresses, and then we come into, you know, the feeling of what it is. There's a section that goes into talking about, it's called About Faith, and it's all this different research that they've done that they would go ahead and they wouldn't let the people who were participating know about it. But what they were really wanting to do is to see the participants smiling and frowning, taking different facial expressions, and seeing if their emotions moved into that when you know, they didn't have that to begin with. They were just being able, they were just being asked to go ahead and express different emotions. And sure enough, you know, if they smiled long enough, they were starting to feel happy. And if they had an angry frown, they wound up feeling angry. And they wouldn't necessarily have anything that had provoked that emotion. It just started coming over them. One of the participants in particular that she talks about in this part of the book just really talks about that he was kind of like perplexed about it. He says, I'm not sure why I'm angry. I don't even have a reason to be angry. But yet I'm just really starting to feel peeved and upset. So it was just over and over again. There were several different exercises that they did, or experiments to to see how that was affecting everybody. Another one that I thought was interesting was they asked them to go ahead and hold a pencil in their mouth. And they said, go ahead and frown and go ahead and smile and see how that, you know, how you feel about that. And there was a hindrance in the expression of that, to the extent of how their faces couldn't express that. And the participants thought they were basically being asked to control certain muscles in their face, when actually they were still trying to see if the emotions would be carried out. And what's fascinating is that with the pencil, that hindering, they're also relating that to Botox, and how people who get those treatments, the muscles aren't being able to fully express themselves. So there's suppressed emotions that wind up happening because they're not fully being able to do all the facial expressions that they were before they did that. So, and they said it could be up to a 10% difference when it comes to being able to fully express and to notice their emotions, because it's being hindered by not being able to fully express that into the muscles. And Andy, you want to talk a little bit about, we started, you know, from that, it really goes into talking about post-traumatic syndrome and how that's being something that really gets hindered into the body. We were talking about that before the show. So he wound up doing some of the free research for what we're going to have available on the website. So I'd love for you to share about some of the things that you discovered with that.
Doesn't one have to have a fairly good self-concept before one can do all this kinds of expression with the hope of gaining and strengthening a good self-concept?
Well, see, that's something that the game he talks about. Not necessarily. It's a matter of if you can take a body stance or you can take a facial expression, your emotions are going to follow that. You would think it'd be something on a cognitive level that you're having to create that, but the research over and over again is saying that just doesn't seem to be the case, which is one of the reasons why this part of the book is so fascinating with what's going on with presence. So, you know, it's that we have that old saying that's been kind of chapter after chapter we've been talking about, it's fake it till you make it. It's fake it till you believe it. So it's a matter of taking that action, and then you will go ahead and be able to feel more empowered, because your body is in the action of that. It's helping you move into the confidence that you're looking for. So it's really fascinating.
Actually, I think it's
habituated.
Fake it till you become it. So if you practice the things that a confident person would do and move in that way, then you will become that. Your mind tends to follow what your body does.
It's a total opposite of what's really out there on you know, a psychological, you know, trainings and things like that. You know, think how much time we spend going to workshops and seminars to, you know, be achieving mindsets that maybe we should be standing up and taking some kind of a pose instead, and, you know, your mindset would follow that. So it's a little bit different in the way that maybe we should be doing workshops from now on. So, you know, and Andy and I were talking about that when it came to yoga and Tai Chi and just all these martial arts that are out there, that, you know, taking certain poses really can create the different kinds of mindsets. And I'm thinking of, you know, Kung Fu and all that, where you take on an animal stance, you know, whether you're the tiger or the mantis or something like that. All those different stances take on a different kind of mental capacity when it comes to, you know, taking on a fighting pose, but a strength pose. They're both all strength poses for like I said, evoking something emotionally within you. It's really just a different, more, I would love to hear somebody from more of an Eastern perspective on that when it comes to martial arts and things like that, and see how they feel about that. That would, even get a guest on that could talk about that. I think they would really know. Joe, have you done any martial arts or anything like that? Have you done yoga?
If I know, my family has.
Okay. So it might be something to think about, is, you know, taking that on. So I would do power walking or anything like that.
Well, I'm at an age at this point where I cannot get into that now. I'm in my mid-80s. And So going into the martial arts, no, that's not for me at this point. But I do think that the one must make good choices on how one expresses oneself. And some do it one way, some do it another way, but a smile is always in good shape and helpful.
Right. And it's a universal language. We all smile and we know what that means. One of the most wonderful things about the smile.
So, yeah, exactly.
You know, if I could jump in here a second, I don't think it's necessary to practice a martial art or do something extreme like that. I think one of the benefits of this book and the ongoing research is that this can be applied in your daily life. I was trying to think of a way, again, being somebody who trains new people, one of my goals is to make them feel more at ease and create an environment that's more conducive to learning. So I was wondering about perhaps including some physical movement for them so that they would, you know, stand up and do some kind of a pose, you know, like a victory pose or something, just kind of as an icebreaker, and see if that puts them in a more relaxed, more confident state. Because these, you know, folks being new, they tend to have a lot of anxiety at first.
Or that one pose, you know, and have it almost like a everybody take on a pose or some kind of thing, and then, you know, have it go around the room kind of thing.
Yeah. Right.
So everybody's contributing to that kind of a posture. That would be interesting. So I'm sure there's stuff out there that does something similar to that.
One of the things that is helpful with other people is showing them respect and being making yourself at one with them, listening, and
mm-hmm.
and the movements that you make, the expressions that you take, those reinforce who you are trying to be anyway, I would
mm-hmm.
think.
Well, you know, that's what that all about faith was, you know, just showing that, you know, we've been talking about taking power stances and, you know, being like Superman or Superwoman, but like you're saying, Joel, you know, it's just a smile or it's just a facial expression that can really just change a whole room. I mean, you know, that's the same thing too, you know. And, you know, maybe, Andy, it could be a smiling exercise. Everybody smiles at each other. That would be interesting. Or get some kind of a laughter, kind of, you know having people, you could have a container with a bunch of different just silly jokes and have people share jokes or something like that. That would be fun. And have just
some real
practice.
Some real practice in this is watching the political candidates' expressions and movements, body language, and then listen to how they defeat themselves by opening their mouths and speaking.
Yeah, Andy and I were watching an interview with Amy Cuddy the other day, and it was on Good Morning Show, and I think it was Good Morning Sunday. Anyway, they were asking her about that. You know, it's like, well, what do you think about the body stances on some of these political people? And she goes, oh, I'm not even going to go there. She wasn't even going to make a comment about any of the candidates, that's for sure. She just said that was going to be a can of worms, so she wasn't going to go there.
Yeah, it could be dangerous to try and interpret what their body language means to somebody else.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not even going to get into that. Yeah. So I thought that was very, very interesting with that. So Amy was really excited about the chapter when we were really getting in the post-traumatic syndrome and really working with vets and just the ideas of having it be something that could be just looking at it from different perspectives. And there's a couple of real renowned people that Amy Cuddy refers to with Mr. McCain. He was basically been one of the forerunners. Colin Copain was his name. And he's literally has a sense of just looking at things from just that perspective of the different psychologies that have been out there for post-traumatic syndrome. And one thing that they talk about is the traditional psychotherapy that they've had forever, where the idea is that you expose the person to desensitize them so they have them talk about it and recall it over and over again. So the whole idea was the more you talk about it, the more it's going to help you to kind of get over it because, you know, it doesn't have the same intensity because you've talked about it. When actually what they're finding is that the trauma has really nothing, sometimes it has nothing whatsoever having to do with the cognition level of experiences. And so they're really finding that it has to do with your body being able to reset itself to reinterpret the world as a dangerous place. Because it talks about, you know, I thought it was so fascinating. He talks in that in this section that if you go to a post-traumatic clinic, you walk in and pretty much everybody is just pan-faced. because they're just so overstimulated, so over-traumatized to the point where they just really don't have much of expression. So imagine going into a room and that, you know, people look at you and there's no expression on their face. That would be really an interesting experience. And what they're finding is really being able to connect to the body, through the body, and Andy and I were talking about this, it's like through the breath, it really helps a lot of these people to be able to, you know, be able to move out of those experiences and help them, give them something else to be able to focus on. We were talking about John Kabat-Zinn, and gosh, it's been at least 20 years ago that I got to see him through a Bill Moyer show that he had done on meditation and just the mind-body connection. And that's definitely what this chapter is about being able to use the breath and just basic yoga, you know, positions and the practice for people who had been in medical situations where the doctors had really done everything they possibly could do for you. And these people were still in situations where they were in pain and they might have frozen backs and things like that, where they needed to learn to be able to move through something. So the breath was something that really helped to carry them. So anything you want to add to that, Andy, from our conversation before the show?
That's another thing that we've had various shows about is related to mindfulness. We've included some various guided exercises about like guided meditation where you're utilizing your breath, but to learn that being able to focus one's breath as a possible treatment for something like a post-traumatic stress or somebody who's been through, you know, a difficult childhood or whatever the case might be, to learn that it's the body that is actually acting almost like a recorder and is holding a lot of that. And that through this physical treatment of controlling your breath or doing something like yoga or one of these other things can help to reverse a lot of that. Because if I've never been in the military, but I might imagine that somebody who's been under that amount of stress, you know, they don't feel like they have any control. But one of the things they can control is their own breathing. And they can focus on that. So I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah, Amy talks about, she said, much of the PDS research has focused on the veterans. Expert conservative estimates is 1 in 5 that suffer from PDS. And the number grows significantly among those who experience combat. And just think of all these guys that have gone over to, you know, several different missions, you know, with different tours that they've had, gosh, 5, 6, you know, tours between Iraq and Afghanistan, and just the amount of distress that they've had to deal with. It says that in the vets, they have proved particularly hard to treat with medications and the traditional psychotherapeutic approaches. And but I know, but one thing that's really been helping is we haven't necessarily talked about it too much on the show before, but a lot of the dog therapy that people have been having. More and more I'm seeing a lot more dogs being able to be out and help a lot of these guys. They actually catch them before they start going into an episode where they, you know, they start going back to, you know, being in combat or something like that. You know, they'll have these episodes or they're sleeping and they can literally, the dog sense when there's the stress is starting to rise within their emotions and being able to have them shift out of it. So the good news is there's all kinds of wonderful things that can get out there for being able to, like Jill said, you know, just being able to smile and being able to connect to somebody, you know, taking on a power stance and having it be something that's really important, or being able to use the breath. And breath is such a wonderful way to reduce your privations that you have and understand that you can control your breathing. It's the first step to understanding how you can control your anxiety. And I've had a couple people in my life that I've really, you know, I feel very thankful to know about yoga and to have practiced it, that it's something that I've introduced to people to help them with their anxieties, knowing that it's something that can really change on that. So anything you want to add with that, Andy, with the breath and anxiety?
Well, since we're running short of time, one of the things that I liked about this chapter was how the quote about, I don't sing because I'm happy. I'm happy because I sing. And how, you know, that's something that we can practice. We can do it in our car. We can maybe, you know, sing at church or whatever. But to practice something like that, something simple like that, and then just see, do I feel any different after I do this?
Well, music therapy is a very solid basis for improving health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you play the music yourself or listen to it or have people who are professionals who carry on this music therapy on the guidelines, and there are majors in this, and my granddaughter is a music therapist of my choice.
Yeah, that can be very powerful. I think, though, that actually being able to participate in it, because if you think about it, it is involved if you're doing singing. It's controlled breathing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, get that karaoke tape out and just start going for it. and smile while you're singing. There you go. I'm smiling. I'm singing. I'm taking my para pose. They're like, oh my gosh, this person will be off the charts. All these wonderful ways to be able to practice with that. So, well, like Andy says, you know, 30 minutes is just way too short a time to be able to just really get into all the different wonderful things that each of these chapters are really offering for us. So I want to thank Joel for jumping on the call. And as always, want to thank Andrew for just being on the call tonight and just all he contributes to the show. And we will see you next time here at the Transformation
Cafe. Thank you very much.
Have a great night. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.